So we've talked the past couple of weeks about David. We talked 2 weeks ago, Justin was here. He talked about how David went from being a shepherd to being a king. He was anointed as the future king of Israel. He defeated the giant Goliath. He escaped Saul's spear, and then he finally took the throne over Israel. And then he brought the Ark of the Covenant into Jerusalem, and we caught him there in that message and that Justin shared, praising God in the streets half naked. And I kind of tied that into the last week because worship was a big theme for David's life. Last week we talked about, so Justin got a chance to talk about the high points in David's life, the mountaintop experiences. Last week we talked about the valleys, the times when David did not make good choices. We talked about his rebellion, his sin with Bathsheba, wanting more than what God had provided him with, more than what God had given him. And the glance turned into a stare, and that stare turned into curiosity, and that led to adultery, which led to deceit and lies, which led to murder. And then Nathan tells a story of Ralph the Lamb. How many of you guys checked up on me on that story? Oh, you got to do that. You got to do that. You got to read. I want you guys to dig into God's word. That story, it might have sounded when I was sharing it like, oh, there's no way that story's in the Bible. If you go and you read it, of course, his name's not Ralph in the Bible, but you look at some of the details that I shared in the story last week, they're in there. He drank from the same cup as the poor man. It was a very intimate relationship there. The picture that was painted when Nathan brought that before David to let him know he didn't get off the hook. He didn't get away with it. He didn't get away with the adultery and the murder of Uriah. And so David is busted. And then David does something that is a little strange in this scenario, something that not a lot of us do, which is that common thread through his life. David, even after he's busted, after the guilt's there, the shame, he worships God, which is amazing. We brought some attention to that. And in this service, I didn't get a chance to really dig into that a whole lot. We kind of ran out of time. But the idea is that God forgives him. He repents. God forgives him. And by the grace of God, David is restored. And he worships through all of that. He worships in the high times, dancing half naked in the streets when the ark is coming into Jerusalem. He worships in the low times when he's really, really messed up. And messed up so bad that when he suffers the earthly consequences of that mistake, of that bad choice, of that sin, his family is a mess. The rest of his time, the rest of his rule over Israel. And in turn, the nation of Israel is a mess because he was the king. So if his family's a mess, the nation's going to be a mess. And so even at the very end of David's life, we find in the chapter headings in chapter 23 of 2 Samuel, it says David's last words. Well, if you turn back one chapter, chapter 22 of 2 Samuel, guess what David's doing? He's worshiping. He's worshiping even to the very end, the very last days of his life. He's worshiping. And you can see this. You can read in the book of Psalms. There's so much transparent worship that took place there between David and God because David had a relationship with God. David worshiped no matter what. He was a man after God's own heart because he depended on God. He had a dependence on God on the mountaintops and in the valleys. So as David's life comes to an end, he gives these final words to his son Solomon. David and Bathsheba had the one son that died. We talked about that last week. But then after that son, they had Solomon. And Solomon was going to be the next king. He was going to succeed David as king. And so David gives Solomon these words. He says, I'm about to go the way of all the earth. I think I want to steal that when I'm going to die. I might have to use that. That's a nice way of saying that. I'm about to go the way of all the earth, he said. So be strong, show yourself a man, and observe what the Lord your God requires. Walk in his ways and keep his decrees and commands, his laws and requirements as written in the law of Moses, so that you may prosper in all you do and wherever you go. And that the Lord may keep his promise to me, and this was God's promise to David, if your descendants watch how they live, and if they walk faithfully before me with all their heart and soul, you will never fail to have a man on the throne of Israel. So David says to Solomon, we're going to get to God speaking in a minute too, but David says to Solomon, follow the instructions. Just follow the instructions. I know you're a man. It's hard to follow the instructions as a man. A lot of the guys in here, we don't like the directions. We don't like the instructions. David says, follow the instructions. And look who this is coming from. I mean, David could very easily have added in here, trust me. it's easier that way. It's better when you follow the instructions. When you don't follow the instructions, it's a mess. I know, your mom knows. Follow the instructions. Son, follow the instructions. David's last words to Solomon there. So we find out that Solomon doesn't follow the instructions. And he ended up where his heart was turned away from God. His heart was turned towards other gods. We're told that in 1 Kings chapter 11. It says he followed Ashtaroth, the goddess of the Sidonites, or Sidians, and Molech, the detestable god of the Ammonites. So Solomon did evil in the eyes of the Lord. He did not follow the instructions. He did not follow the Lord completely as David, his father, had done. So he fathered Ashtaroth, this goddess of fertility. And if you do some research on her, the goddess was connected to sexual worship. It was not just a little bit off. It was way off. It was way out here. He followed Molech, a detestable god, the detestable god of the Ammonites. Worship services to Molech. Can you guys remember what worship services to Molech? It involved live human sacrifice, but not just humans. Babies. Their worship services would involve sacrificing live babies to Molech. It doesn't say that Solomon just allowed these practices in the nation of Israel, does it? He followed this goddess of fertility. He followed the god Molech. So it's not a stretch. In fact, it would be very reasonable to believe that David had participated in these worship services. That David had participated in the sexual worship associated with Ashtaroth. He probably would have participated in the child sacrificing that was connected to worshiping Molech. You know, David, his dad wasn't a spotless lamb either. But when God speaks, or when we share this in the Word, it says that Solomon did evil in the eyes of the Lord. He did not follow the Lord completely as David, his father, did. David wasn't spotless. He made bad decisions. He made good decisions. But the thread that ran through David's life is no matter what, he came back to God. He kept coming back to God. Good decisions, he would praise God. Bad decisions, he would worship God. But you don't see Solomon follow that same pattern. Solomon drifted far from that. How does that happen? I mean, how do you just end up there? I mean, way there, way out there, way outside of the limits. When you wake up realizing that your worship consists of sexual acts with other worshipers of this foreign god. When you wake up the day after you sacrifice someone else's son or daughter to Molech. Let's write this down. Most people do not aspire to end up as a fool or a failure. They don't. Most people don't plan that out. Most people, that's not their life plan. I want to be a failure. I want to be a fool. Most people don't plan that out. That's not part of their life plan. They don't set up goals hoping to fail in their future. But it happens. Even if you don't want to, even if you try not to, I hate looking like a fool. It's just so embarrassing when it happens. And I think some of it's because it's preventable. Most of the times when you act foolish or you do something foolish or you're caught looking like a fool, you think, and part of the shame in that is, I could have prevented that. That could have been preventable. But despite my efforts, from time to time, that happens, you know. So, in college, I worked for a video rental store where they rented VHS tapes. In college, I worked for a little bit for a video rental place, and towards closing time one night, the owner came in, and we were just chit-chatting back and forth, talking about things and talking about different people that had come in the store, and I said, well, the strangest thing happened today. This big barley guy came in, and he went straight to the chick flick section, and it was just, And I thought, man, this guy is, you know, he's a big barley guy and he's in a chick flick section. He rented something like Sleepless in Seattle or Fried Green Tomatoes or Walk in the Clouds, old Keanu Reeves. You know, he rented something like that. And I was telling the owner of the store that it was just funny to see a big barley guy come in and alone, you know, no one with him and rent something like that. And you could see on his face that my boss was a little confused. And he said, "Barley man." I said, "Yeah, big, lumberjack looking, you know, just thick, scruffy flannel shirt, old jeans, you know, a barley man." And he said, "You mean burly." You know, I hate that when it happens. That happens a lot. Despite my efforts, I will look like a fool from time to time. But Solomon took it to a new level. Solomon did it right. If you're going to be a fool, he set the bar high. This was not some small failure. This was huge. You know, every so often on the news, you'll hear about the tragedy of a plane crash. And sooner or later in the news coverage, you'll hear that they're looking for something. What is that thing they're looking for? The black box. The box that's made of this indestructible material that if you would just make the rest of the plane out of the same material as the black box, you probably wouldn't need the black box, but I don't know. Somehow it doesn't work that way. I'm not into aerial science or anything. I'm a preacher, so. But there's this little black box, and the reason why that little black box is so very important is because it tells them what went wrong, so that hopefully they can prevent that same failure in the future. Solomon left behind a little black box for us. It's called the Book of Ecclesiastes. In Ecclesiastes, he records, here's what went wrong. Here's how you can avoid this same failure. Don't do these things. Don't follow this route. You know, what's so scary about Solomon's little black box, so his book of Ecclesiastes, is that it is extremely relative to today. Because one of the things he talks about searching for, in fact, a key thing he talks about searching for, is pleasure. It's seeking out happiness. And we see this in our society. We are a very pleasure-driven society. We're a very pleasure-driven culture. And if you were to ask an American, or even people in this room, people in the church down the road, people in the church on the other side of the state, what's the goal in life? A lot of people, the first thing they'd say without thinking, well, to be happy. Happiness. That's the goal in life. That's what we should all be shooting for. You know, if you have a desire, you should go for it. You should satisfy that desire. If you have an itch, you should scratch it. You know, people go to great lengths to keep other people happy. People pleasing has become a big deal. People avoid necessary conflict just to keep people happy. People will act like animals on Black Friday for their own happiness, to seek their own pleasure. I mean, how many people are buying stuff for other people on Black Friday? A lot of people are buying stuff for themselves. We're such a pleasure-driven society. A culture that seeks pleasure. We live for happiness. And we should. It's in our Constitution, right? We're free for the pursuit of happiness. There's nothing wrong. I'm not shooting down the Constitution. There's nothing wrong with happiness. But it's when happiness becomes the sole focus of what you're shooting for. It's when that's the target, when that's the goal, and everything else is pushed aside. Because then things get out of kilter. Then priorities get knocked out of line. A great way to look at this, just kind of step back. Where does the money go in America? Think about that. Actors, actresses, professional athletes, they make millions. While teachers, firemen, and police personnel make very humble salaries. We're pleasure driven. There's no doubt about it. Solomon said in his little black box in Ecclesiastes chapter 2, he said, "I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure." Solomon went chasing after anything and everything that he thought would make him happy, that he thought would fill that pleasure void. He went to laughter first. I mean, because that's where you go. If you want to be happy, you find a way to laugh. You turn on Comedy Central, you know, and you go there. But he was still lacking that fulfilling feeling that Solomon was looking for. And in his words, he said it was meaningless. He tried drinking and partying, other forms of pleasure, and he says they too, they ended up empty. They were meaningless when I came to the end of it. So in his search, his pursuit for pleasure, his pursuit for happiness, he looked to building things. Because, you know, guys, we get a lot of You know, it feels good to build something. Look at it and say, I built that. He built things. He acquired lots of stuff. Lots of stuff. I can't exaggerate that enough. Solomon had just a ton of stuff. He acquired stuff. He built things. And he said, this surely will bring me happiness. This will bring me pleasure. But when he came to the end of the day on that one, he said, you know, it's just not satisfying that. It's not scratching that itch. He was trying to find meaning and fulfillment in the pleasures of this world, the things that this world has to offer, and it wasn't working for him. And he tells us this in Ecclesiastes, in Solomon's little black box. He says, I tried this over here, I tried this over here, I tried that over there, and it didn't work. And each step we see is a step away from following the instructions that he was given. Follow God. Follow God, follow his instructions. Each step was a step away from finding fulfillment in God. See, something that I've noticed is that success and failure both happen one incremental step at a time. So whichever way you're going to go, when in the fork in the road, if you're going to head towards failure or you're going to head towards success, each one of them happen one incremental step at a time. It's not instant. Solomon did not wreck his life overnight. It was one incremental step at a time. One of the big avenues that where Solomon tried to find fulfillment, where he tried to find pleasure, was women. And we're talking women with a capital E in the middle. Women. I mean, 700 wives, 300 concubines. 1,000 women. You don't accumulate 1,000 women overnight. I don't care if you are on the cover of, you know, People magazine or the sexiest man of the year or whatever. You're not going to do that overnight. 1,000 women. And he thought that was going to bring him happiness. I could have saved him a lot of heartache. I could have given him some advice there. That's not going to work. He added a couple here, a couple there. A woman from this country over here, a woman from this nation over here. And it happened gradually over time. And this happened because he did not follow the instructions. We're told that King Solomon, however, loved many foreign women besides Pharaoh's daughter, Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Sidonites, and Hittites. They were from nations about which the Lord had told the Israelites, I told you, follow my instructions. You must not intermarry with them because they will surely turn your hearts after their gods. Nevertheless, so here are the instructions. But Solomon thought that, you know, he could do this other thing and it would work out all right. Or I don't know what he was thinking, but nevertheless, that word, that's such a scary word because that happens a lot in our lives. Here's what God says, nevertheless, here's what I did, here's what I'm choosing presently. Nevertheless, Solomon held fast to them in love. He had 700 wives of royal birth and 300 concubines, and his wives led him astray. Most people don't aspire to end up as a fool or a failure. Success and failure both happen one incremental step at a time. And it's really a tragedy, the story. Because Solomon had tremendous, tremendous potential for greatness. Let's rewind. Let's go all the way back to the beginning of Solomon's rule over Israel. It says when the king, Solomon, went to Gibeon to offer sacrifices, for that was the most important high place, and Solomon offered 1,000 burnt offerings on that altar. At Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon during the night in a dream, and God said, ask for whatever you want me to give you. I want to sit back, think about the power of that statement, of that question, that request. God's given Solomon a blank check and signing it, God, you fill in the space, whatever it is. Whatever amounts, what is it you want? You get a chance to name it. Solomon asks for wisdom. He He could have asked for so many other things, but he asked for wisdom because here at the beginning of his rule, Solomon is so nervous about ruling Israel. And he says, I'm just a little child. He's young. He's inexperienced. And so he's nervous and he asks God for wisdom. Give me wisdom because I need wisdom if I'm going to do this job that's before me. He started off humble. He started off smart. He was smart to ask for wisdom and then he got wisdom. God was impressed. He was so impressed with his choice. Look at what happens. God says, I will do what you have asked. I'll give you a wise and discerning heart so that there will never have been anyone like you, nor will there ever be. Moreover, I will give you what you have not asked for, both riches and honor. So he wins a bonus round. So that in your lifetime, you will have no equal among kings. So God gives Solomon wisdom. And it's just amazing. The jimmies on top of it, the sprinkles, is riches and honor. I mean, that's what God's so big, he can just throw that in. Oh, you asked for wisdom. I'm just going to throw this in. You know, riches, honor, huge things. And then God says in verse 14, it's a little reminder, follow the instructions. And if you walk in my ways and obey my statutes and commands as David your father did, I will give you a long life. So David tells Solomon, son, follow the instructions. Trust me. It's going to be better for you. It's going to be better for the country, better for the nation. Follow the instructions. God himself, speaking to Solomon, says, this is a great thing you've wished for. I want to give you this. I'm also going to give you those other things. And by the way, what? Say it. Follow the instructions. See, the man divinely gifted with wisdom from God himself was not immune to folly. Let's take this personally. Let's write this down. So neither am I. Solomon was given divine wisdom from God, and he was not immune to folly. So if this guy could fall, every one of us can. If he's not immune to folly, neither am I. Neither am I. In Deuteronomy, God is giving instructions to when Israel will have a king. And this was generations and generations before they even had a king, before they even thought about having a king. They weren't even really established in Deuteronomy. They're on their way there. And so in Deuteronomy, God says, okay, you don't know you're going to do this, but I'll tell you that you're going to do this. You're going to ask for a king, and I'm going to give you a king. And here's some things that the king should not do. I want you to listen to this. We're going to grab three things from this here. God specifically says, the king, moreover, must not acquire great numbers of horses for himself or make the people return to Egypt to get more of them. For the Lord has told you, you are not to go back that way again. So they left Egypt. And God is saying, I want you to be dependent on me, not on Egypt. Don't go back there. Don't get your horses from Egypt. Don't go back there. Be dependent on me. Don't be dependent on them. Because even after they left, and they were in slavery, even after they left and God freed them, and it was the 10 plagues and the parting of the Red Sea, they were still saying, let's go back to Egypt. We liked it there because we knew what was going on. We were secure. And God's saying, don't find your security in other places. I want you to find your security in me. So don't go to Egypt. And this is going to be very important here in a few minutes. Don't go to Egypt to get what? Horses. Some of you guys are thinking, man, he's getting worked up about horses. We'll get there. So that's one. He says he must not take many wives or his heart will be led astray. Well, you guys know the end of the story, all that. So that's number two. He must not accumulate large amounts of silver and gold. So that's three. So we have horses from Egypt. We have many wives. We have silver and gold. So generations and generations and generations later, we have Solomon. Solomon is king. And one of the first things that Solomon does, and this is just recorded verses above the conversation about God and between Solomon and, with God and wisdom before that dream. Just verses before that, we read in 1 Kings chapter 3 that Solomon made an alliance with Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and married his daughter. It's just facepalm. Come on. You left Egypt. Don't be dependent on them. And this is where I see a big difference between David and Solomon. I mean, Solomon, He started losing dependence on God, and when we see him at the end of his life, he's very self-sufficient. So he makes this alliance with Egypt of all people. We find out later, if you turn to chapter 10, you would read that Solomon accumulated chariots and horses. He had 1,400 chariots and 12,000 horses. A couple verses later, we find out where he got the horses. It's going to blow you away. Solomon's horses were imported from Egypt and Coo. God said, don't get your horses from where? Follow the instructions. He got his horses from Egypt. So what else did God say not to do? He said not to accumulate large amounts of gold or silver. Well, in 1 Kings chapter 10, we also read about this. It says the weight of the gold that Solomon received yearly was 666 talents. That's a lot of gold. Let me share this, because talents was a use of measurement back then. And so when you take 666 talents, that's equal to 25 tons in today's understanding of the difference between a talent and a ton. That's about 23 metric tons if you go that way. So let's break this down in ounces. That is 800,000 ounces of gold a year. Now, yesterday I checked, and yesterday gold was trading in the United States for $1,168 per ounce. Do you see where I'm going with this? $1,168 per ounce. So you take 800,000 ounces multiplied by 1,168, and you get $934,400,000 a year. Yearly salary, $934.4 million. I cannot imagine that in a lifetime, much less a year. So, I mean, he was getting paid when the whole team was getting paid. So I can kind of let this one slide because God says, because you ask for wisdom, I'll give you what? Riches and honor. So I can say, you know what? My God is a God of blessing. He's awesome. And maybe this is just a huge blessing from God. But I tell you what, the way you see David use the financial blessings that God gave him, if you read about David and the way he handled the gold and the silver that God gave him, David poured it into the temple. He gave it to God. He was generous. He was very thankful so David was thanksgiving with his gold and his riches, whereas Solomon was Black Friday. You know, me, gimme. And you can read about that in 1 Kings chapter 10. You can read about the extravagance that Solomon went through with his gold. And he didn't even, silver was below him. He didn't even worry about the silver. It was so bad, he made goblets. His goblets were made of gold. He drank from gold cups. You got to read about his throne. It's nuts, the extravagancy that went there. So don't buy horses from Egypt. Don't accumulate large amounts of silver. And then the other part of the instructions of Deuteronomy was not to take many wives or your heart will be led astray. And we've already read that he had 700 wives from royal birth and 300 concubines. And his wives led him astray. Exactly what God had said would happen way back in Deuteronomy. Follow the instructions. Just follow the instructions. They're right there. Follow them. Let's write this down. I cannot toss God's instructions for life aside and expect to be successful. When we look at Solomon, let's take this personally. Let's bring this into our life, my life, Monday when we're going back into work. I cannot toss God's instructions for life aside and expect to be successful. It's so easy to sit and listen to the story about Solomon and say, you know what, I can't relate to Solomon. I mean, that's just so extravagant. It's so out there. Everything was so excessive. $900 million a year, 1,000 women, 12,000 horses, imported from Egypt and Coo. And it makes it easier to sit back and not take it personally, and not connect, and not relate. But really, the nuts and the bolts of it all are very relatable. Because it doesn't matter if it was 12,000 horses or 12 horses. If a horse was imported from Egypt, he wasn't following the instructions. Here are the instructions. Here's what they say. Any step out of line, you're not following them. It doesn't matter if it was 1,000 women from foreign countries or if it was 10 women from foreign countries. It was against what God said to do. Now, I do want to remind us all, God is not being a racist here. God does not have problems with interracial or ethnic. It wasn't an ethnic issue for God. God's nation, Israel, was being held together and protected for bringing out Jesus, the Messiah. These other countries, they had pagan worship, and that was the reason God said, I don't want you to marry outside of the chosen people because they're going to lead your heart away from me, and I need you to stay with me. They're going to bring in pagan worship. They're going to bring in these gods. They're going to bring in Molech and live baby sacrifices. They're going to bring in Astaroth and just all the things that go along with that, this goddess of fertility. Just don't do it. So it wasn't a problem with the ethnicity, but it was a spirituality. And that communicates right over into today in our life. The New Testament says don't be unequally yoked. Christians, marry Christians. It's not worth the risk. It's going to be a mess if you try to marry someone that's not. It's no different than what God was asking the Israelites to do. So what else do we translate over into the New Testament? And what are some things that God is asking us to do or asking us not to do? You know the commands that you're breaking. You know the things that God has asked you to do, the desires of God's heart that you're not following through with, that you're not going forward with. You know the places in your life where you are rebelling against the instructions, where you're saying, I'm going to do this my way. Nevertheless, I hear what you say. I'm going to do it this way anyway. I think sometimes that we think that certain commands or instructions, I think they just don't apply to us. Sometimes we think that we're somehow exempt or we're an exception to the rule that, you know, I can live with this person even though we're not married because my situation is different. It's different than someone else's situation. I've got a financial, you know, deal here that we can't get married because it's going to da-da-da, or I've got this set up, or you don't know my past. I came from a past. I've been through 3 divorces and I want to make sure I get it right before I go. No. We do that. We justify because we say, you know what? I'm an exception to this rule because of my situation, because of where I've come from. We tell lies, little lies, and we deceive people at our place of work. And you say, well, it's just the line of work I'm in. Everybody does it in this business. In this type of business, everybody does it. Everybody's lying to everybody else, and that's normal. So I'm exempt from that rule. I'm exempt from that instruction. No, you're not. Let's write this down. I am not the exception to God's commands. We get in so much trouble going down that road thinking we are. And I think this contributed to Solomon. Solomon's, I'm the king. Maybe I'm the exception. Maybe I can get away with, you know, starting off with Pharaoh's daughter. Then it kind of led into other things. And before he knows it, there's 700 wives, 300 concubines. All of his wives from royal birth, which means they all came from different countries, different nations. Don't think that way. It does not end good. King Solomon started off by impressing God by asking for wisdom, and he ended up worshiping a sexual goddess of fertility and Molech, the detestable god of the Ammonites. He followed them because he didn't follow the instructions. Israel's most powerful, let's write this down. Israel's most powerful and prosperous king was not immune to spiritual failure. So neither am I. Israel's most powerful and prosperous king was not immune to spiritual failure. So neither am I. As Solomon grew old, his wives turned his heart after other gods, and his heart was not fully devoted to the Lord his God, as the heart of David, his father, had been. So let's write this down. A partially devoted heart is not a fully devoted heart. Captain Obvious here. But I think we need to be reminded of that. We need to understand. Sometimes when we think partial, we think of 20%. You know, 20%, that's definitely not 100%. That's partial. 90% is still partial. 95% devotion is partial. Because anything short of full is partial. Full devotion is what God deserves. It's what he asked for. He doesn't settle for less. He doesn't deserve any less. Full devotion, all in. A fully devoted heart is one that is fully dependent on God. And when we look at Solomon and David and I compare them, David had some rough times. And as I said, he wasn't a spotless lamb. He wasn't a pure guy himself. He made some very bad choices, some very bad decisions. But when God compares Solomon to David, He says, Solomon, you didn't follow like David followed. And I'm thinking, is God reading the same Bible I'm reading? Because David didn't follow so well. But as I started to think about that and ponder that and kind of think, you know, what is the difference between David and Solomon? And it really came back to that understanding that David always remained dependent on God. He always went running back to God. He was always going highs, lows, in-betweens. He was dependent on God. And I think that's where some of the translation of that David still followed me. He still had a heart after me. Sure, he messed up. He made some mistakes, but he was still following after me. He was still chasing after me. Whereas Solomon, you don't see that. He starts making these choices and choices, and he becomes so very self-sufficient, so very successful. And he doesn't depend on God. And I think that's a key to that, that a fully devoted heart is one that is fully dependent on God. See, it wasn't that Solomon had more than he could handle. It was that all he had took the place of his dependence on God. So follow the instructions. David told Solomon, son, follow the instructions. It's going to be better for you. God himself told Solomon, follow the instructions. Follow the instructions. And Solomon speaks to us today from his little black box. Follow the instructions. Ecclesiastes 12, the very end of his, towards the end of the book of Ecclesiastes, some of the last few verses, he says, now all has been heard. Here's the conclusion of the matter. Fear God, follow the instructions. Fear God and keep his commandments. For this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether it is good or evil. Follow the instructions.